You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Bob. How are you doing today?
I just cannot complain, as usual.
You usually say some version of can't complain.
I think I say that exact version.
Yeah.
Because if I put it any other way, it probably wouldn't be true. Like if I said I don't complain, yeah. That wouldn't be true.
But you can't complain.
I won't complain.
You refuse to complain. You could complain, honestly.
I could. Yeah. Well, let's take that for the overtime, though. That's paywall material.
That's free will.
You don't get to hear complaints for free on this podcast.
We were going to save for the paywall our sleep problems.
That, too. There's a lot behind the paywall. But first, let's tell people what's on the other. Well, first, let me introduce you. After introducing me, I'm Robert Wright, publisher of Non-Zero Newsletter. This is the Non-Zero Podcast. You're Paul Bloom, publisher of the Small Potatoes Newsletter, world-famous psychologist. And it's a good week to have a world-famous psychologist to talk to because we're going to talk about some psychology. For example, we're going to talk about AI, including the fact that you, in your Small Potatoes Newsletter, recently came out as an AI optimist, at least so far as it pertains to higher education. I may give you some pushback there. We're going to talk about Elon Musk. And although you're not a clinical psychologist, there may be some aspects of his psychology you can comment on. And first, we're going to talk about something that everyone is aware of, probably even in Canada, that happened in Minneapolis, which is the killing of Renee Good. There's some psychological aspects of that I'm kind of interested in. Now, did that get a lot of attention in Canada?
I mean, I don't know. I'm just in my house, so it get a lot of, you know, but yeah, I mean, I think Canada pays as much attention to the US stuff as Americans do. It is something about it, you know, all people die all the time and people are killed all the time. And, you know, even the Venezuela adventure involved many deaths, but there's something about this, which is, I think, heartbreaking. It's just emotionally moving. And I didn't want to watch the video. I finally did because you told me to, and I figured I should be prepared, but
you hadn't watched it until then.
I'm trying to stay away from X, and you know, I just heard a lot of people talking about it. But then I saw little clips, little still frames. But then I watched the whole video. I watched the video from this angle, from that angle, and now I am prepared to talk about it.
Wow. Yeah, it is heartbreaking. You know, it became more so. Let's get into the psychology right away. There's a couple of aspects of that I want to get into, but one is just what a Rorschach test. This, you know, things like the video are kind of obviously, I mean, once, you know, politics are as polarized as they are in America, at least, but, you know, the video. So did you see the video of that was taken from his camera, the shooter's camera? Okay. So now that presumably was leaked by the U.S. government, right? And they thought it worked in their favor. And you can make that argument, but what was interesting to me was the ways in which it didn't. And one of them was, I think that's the only video in which we saw her saying, "I'm not mad at you." There's this obviously innocuous looking lady who says, yeah, "I'm not mad at you," to a guy who shoots her 5 seconds later.
She says something, "I'm not mad at you, dude," or something. It's kind of
she said a bit dismissive.
Like, you know,
she says, "It's fine, dude. I'm not mad at you." And he shoots her more like, I don't know, 20 seconds later, probably. But that video. So there was that kind of that didn't seem to work for him. And there was something else that didn't as well. And I'll get to that. What did seem to work for him, and I think this is the reason probably that they released it, is two things. One was her wife was acting in a way that I think most people will find not all that appealing. She almost seemed to be taunting him before this happened.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he was videotaping their car. I don't know if he even knew she was associated with the car, the wife, that is. But and so she was videoing him, and she was kind of taunting him, which I guess some of the people who show up to protest and monitor these ICE raids, like, that's what they do. But in any event, that I can see how the government would think that worked in their favor. And then the other thing was that at the moment she starts to drive off, suddenly his smartphone is radically disoriented and you hear a noise that could be interpreted as like, you know, oomph or something, like he's getting hit or something. I think there's a totally different explanation for why the smartphone flipped, but which is just that was when he was shooting her. And there's also
a different video taken from a distance, which was the first video released where the car shoots past him. And you could watch that video and think he was hit. And
I think
that's the source of really what happened was he was jumping back, but you could watch and believe he was hit. And this is where Trump presumably got the idea that he was run over.
Yeah, I think in my mind, it's still not clear whether the car made any contact with him. It might have.
But it could have.
Kind of obviously not very direct impact. He might have kind of gotten brushed by it. But the thing, there was another angle, very, very grainy, though, very grainy and distant, that did make it look kind of like he was hit. But looking at it closely.
And that's the one I'm talking about.
That one, yeah.
Yeah.
I think there are other explanations for what's going on in that. But in any event, I don't know whether he was hit. But the thing that when I say a Rorschach test it is, there's one sense in which I thought it worked pretty dramatically in favor of, you know, the defenders of Rene Good, which is that from his angle. So, okay, there is this moment where the smartphone suddenly is, you know, it's filming up in the air. And you know, again, if he didn't get hit, that the reason it does that is because he is moving out of, there's no doubt he's kind of moving out of the way. And there's no doubt that he starts shooting her. And so, yeah, I guess you're not going to, you know, the smartphone's not going to stay stable. But the thing that I thought really worked against the government is that he's right there. He's kind of more or less in front of the left headlight.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can clearly see from his angle is like the car is pointing at him. He's in front of the left headlight. And then she cranks the steering wheel pretty sharply to the right.
Yeah.
You can see that. Now, I'm not saying he had time to absorb all that. I'm just saying that given that their claim is she was trying to run him over, I think that video almost single-handedly disproves that. So, you know, she could have run him over. Yeah. That would have been easy. Don't turn the steering wheel.
Yeah. I'll give you my perception, and then we could talk about the broader issues. My perception watching the video, and I have, you know, I have all sorts of biases, and again, you know, in her favor maybe. But, and particularly knowing her demeanor before and knowing what happened. But she was, the guy wanted to get in the car, you know, talking to her, by the way, not the way police officers are supposed to talk to people. But
I'm not sure we know exactly what he wanted or what had been said to her. But anyway, go ahead.
But it's plain she was waiting for watching traffic. She was going to drive off. She turned to merge into traffic and drive off. That much is true. I assume that the ICE guy, and his name is now known, the ICE guy thought he was going to kill her. It is actually my understanding.
Wait, you assume what? I just want to make sure.
I assume that he thought he was in danger. He didn't shoot her for kicks. He thought he was in danger.
No, he didn't shoot her for kicks, but I can imagine him shooting her because she's trying to escape. Like, yeah, I can.
But, I mean, say more, because yes, I understand if someone is a violent fugitive, and of course, you know, you could shoot at them to kill them. If they're escaping, even if they're just running away, there are these cases.
Remember, this guy had gotten dragged by a car. He put his arm in the window only like 6 months ago.
Yep.
In this case, it was actually an immigrant, presumably an illegal immigrant.
And I think that fits into the narrative to say he was frightened.
Well, yeah, or I can imagine a lot of things. I can imagine if this was me, right? If I had been dragged 100 yards, I can imagine me retrospectively thinking, man, I wouldn't mind blowing that guy's head off. You know, when you're mad, you're pissed off and that's running through your head. Like, that's what I should have done is like, whatever. I can imagine a lot of things, but I
just, what you're saying is the idea you're entertaining is that he didn't think his life was in danger. He said, this person, I wanted them to stop. They're driving away. I'll now kill them.
Well, let me say, first of all, let me just pause and say the point I was just now trying to make was that both sides, they look at the video, they see the thing that favors their case. And I think it's possible that in the government's case, this, it was a mistake. It really misled them that maybe it was a mistake to, because now everyone has seen the woman. Everyone has seen the woman right before the shooting and what she looked like. And I don't think that works in their favor. And then I also think, again, what I said about I know it's always easy to say these things in slow motion, but from where he was, the evidence was there that she was not trying to run him down. Because that, you know, look what she did with stealing them. Now, that said, as far as what's going through his head, I think it may be when things are moving that fast, it may almost be misleading to talk about what they, quote, think, what they're thinking. Right. I mean, you're kind of going on reflex. And I let me run an evolutionary hypothesis by you. I suspect that in terms of, you know, reflexes are evoked by particular circumstances. You know, it's like something's falling toward you, you jump out of the way. And I suspect that going way back in evolutionary time, in the evolution of our species, there is a distinction between two kinds of perceptions. One is that person is trying to hurt me or kill me.
Mm-hmm.
And then your focus is on the person. And the other is, that person's doing something that endangers me and you're pissed off at them, but you're not, it's not the same reaction. It's not like they must be stopped. So, you know, I suspect given it, you know, just looking at the video, the most logical of those two reflexes for him to have been having is this car might hit me if I don't step to this side. But that's not necessarily the same as thinking that she is trying to hit him. And I honestly don't think he thought that. But I admit, you don't know for sure. What?
You don't know for sure. And this will be worth it. But if your interpretation is right, he should go to prison.
I think on the merits, he would go to prison.
You're not allowed to shoot people because they piss you off.
You're not. Now, I got to say, you know, it's tough being a cop. And they have to make split-second decisions, and all that's true. But as I read the law, and as I speculate about what was going on in his head, I mean, if you could confirm my own belief about what was probably going on in his head, then according to the law, yeah, he should go to jail. Because
also, even if he thought he was in danger, part of police, this is what I'm getting, I got this from a legal podcast, Advisory Opinions, where they did a deep dive. Part of legal training, and most states for cops, right, part of police training, is there's very, very limited cases where you fire into a car that's threatening you. Because it actually is not a useful way, despite what one sees in the movies, of stopping the car. It typically just puts a lot of people in danger.
Yeah, and by the way, of course, the second and third shots, he was definitely not in danger. Now, again, things are moving fast, and but there's no doubt that the second and third shot were fired from the side of the car. I mean, it is one thing I've noticed in police shootings, I guess particularly is what I'm thinking of. Once they start shooting, they don't stop. And I suspect that's partly an impulse even I would feel if once you decide you got to use lethal force, maybe the way the psychology works, you just keep going. But second, third shots, he was not in danger when he fired them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm tempted to see this as a tragic case of overreaction by a guy who was frightened. And he had, you know, your interpretation might be right.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Did you hear the part of the video, and this had to have been said by one of the three ICE agents on the scene, where like right after her car crashes, like not long at all, like we're talking maybe, I don't know, 5 seconds after the shooting. Did you hear? Guy says, fucking bitch. That's definitely an ICE agent saying that. And they can find out whether it's his voice. It was a clear enough recording that a scientist could find out. I mean, an expert in this could find out. And, I can say for sure, if it's his voice, that wouldn't help him with a jury.
You know what bothers me about much as besides like this obvious fact of an innocent person being killed? And she's entirely innocent. You know, you have a right to protest in this country, you know, entirely innocent, is that from the government standpoint, this is not, you can imagine governments do all sorts of things and employ all sorts of law enforcement agencies and so on, and things go bad. And, you know, this is just the way things go. But from a government standpoint, this is a feature, not a bug. This is something which they say, this is, I'm not saying they're happy about it, but maybe they're kind of, this is great. We want these people to come into democratic places, cause violence, cause trouble, so we could A, punish our enemies, and B, ratchet things up the way we want them ratcheted up. So when J.D. Vance talks about it, there's a generous interpretation which says, you know, sort of thing, well, he saw it a different way, and he sees this as you know, a cruel domestic terrorist trying to kill a good police officer. Another sense in which there's, it's very coldly cynical, where he says, you know, I'm going to defend our guys again and demonize the rest.
Oh, I think you're giving Vance too much credit almost. I mean, I think he's got one calculation. What do I need to say to maximize the chances that I am the Republican nominee for president? And by the way, I think his pattern is to say things that maximize the chances of that and minimize the chances that he'll win the general election. But that's another story. I mean, he just goes again and again, Charlie Kirk, whatever. He just goes 100% to the right.
Well, and it's a different conversation, but do you think full loyalty to Trump is a bad strategy for Vance?
I don't think loyalty is a term. Again, I mean, if suddenly it made political sense for him to not be loyal, he'd not be loyal.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I mean, Stephen Miller is different. And he's kind of the de facto head of all this. Like, immigration is his portfolio. And God knows, you know, he's capable of getting Kristi Noem to do what he wants. I mean, he's a very powerful player in the White House. And I was saying to somebody on Twitter the other day, it was like, Stephen Miller is just like bad. He's like, to me, he's the creepiest guy in the administration, but he's bad in an ideologically committed way. This is his ideology at work, the way he feels about immigrants and, authoritarianism, everything. That's the real him.
Say what you will about the tenets of National Socialism, but at least that was an ethos.
Well, that's kind of, that's disturbingly apt in his case, whereas J.D. Vance is just willing to be as bad as necessary without any limit, so far as I can tell, in order to serve his political ends. They're very different in that way, but those two tendencies are combining in a very unfortunate way.
You know, there's an alternative world where J.D. Vance, the author of Hillbilly Elegy, the graduate of Yale Law School, the guy with the reputation being able to talk to everybody, is Kamala Harris's VP candidate right now.
Yeah.
There's no world where Stephen Miller is. I mean, because you're right, Stephen Miller is.
He has
an ideology.
Right.
That, by the way, if this was all, my quote was impenetrable, is a quote from The Big Lebowski, where.
Oh, that's so funny. I just saw that recently again.
The dude says, I think it was the dude says, you know, about their and some enemies they're dealing with. They're a bunch of Nazis. And the John Goodman character says they're worse. They're nihilists. And then he has the quote, say what you will about the tenets of, you
know. It's funny for a couple of reasons. First of all, I did just watch it and I was reminded that John Goodman is so good in that movie. I mean, they're both good. They're both the leads, but, and Steve Buscemi for that matter. But, God, John Goodman is so funny. But also, I recently, maybe I was inspired by the movie, now that you mentioned it. The piece I wrote in the Non-Zero newsletter about this, I was comparing, you know, I mean, a classic traffic generation ploy is to compare Trump to Hitler. But actually, the first time I've done it, and I did it, I tried to do it carefully and not overdo it. But I made that
distinction. It's always going to be tasteful when you do this sort of thing.
Yeah, well, see for yourself. But I did make the distinction that, you know, like Hitler had an official using force is good because it's nature's way. He formally committed the naturalistic fallacy. Yeah. Whereas Trump, I think he's more inclined to say, look, it's too bad the world is like this, but it's the way you got to be. And that is a distinction. I think with Trump, it does amount to a kind of nihilism. But again, you're right. It's not. Hitler was, in that sense, not a nihilist. He believed in something.
Like I was reading his 3 in the morning last night. I was reading his interview in the New York Times, the transcript of a 2-hour interview. At one point, anti-Semitism comes up, and Trump says in his
I'd like to freeze frame on that Freudian slip there, where you and look, where you almost called Trump Hitler, and while I want to clarify while we're at it, doing this in the newsletter, I did say I actually prefer Trump's nihilism to Hitler's conviction. So
there we go. There's no
misunderstanding.
That's good. Also, and I will insist on this. Trump is much funnier. I never, you know.
Then people say Hitler. I don't know. You've heard this, right?
He was a good hang, Hitler, but I'm not sure he's supposed to be very funny.
Maybe you're not the one who told me he's funny then. So anyway,
So Trump was going on about he was asked about anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
And Trump says basically he is the most he loves the Jews more than any president ever. He's the least anti-Semitic president ever. Going on in this Trumpian way. But the truth is, I kind of believe him. I don't think Trump has any ideologies to speak of. I don't think he has any animus against Jews. I don't think he's really racist. I don't think he's sexist, not more than any typical man his age. He is this enormous power mad narcissist, but he's untroubled by ideologies.
Untroubled in the sense of he doesn't have to bother with having one, you mean? Or
yeah. Like so there's things that would be sometimes if you're for instance, you know, a lot of Republicans are putatively, you know, pro-life. It's not very popular. Trump doesn't, you know, it's not gonna hold Trump back.
Yeah.
So Trump does what makes him popular, what works for him. And, you know, and if something didn't, he'd stop doing it.
Yeah. I mean, there are some themes that go back a ways with him.
Anti-immigrant sentiments?
I think probably what's clearer is the economic nationalism, which that's not unrelated to maybe, but I mean, tariffs, like a pro-tariff guy. And, you know, he did do that thing, speaking of race, kind of, you know, when the Central Park Five were accused of raping and killing that woman, 5 young black guys, turned out they were falsely accused, had nothing to do with it. Trump put out a full page ad calling for the death penalty for them.
Yep.
You know, may not have been racially motivated, but I do think, I think that is part of his ideology. Is that you use force brutally to keep shit under control, at least as Trump defines under control.
I think Trump has no problems using race or sex or racism or sexism, possibly anti-Semitism, to get what he wants.
Yeah.
There's no sort of thing he said, oh, I'm too principled to use that. So I think that's true. Certainly sexism, he often uses wields against his enemies. But I just don't think, I think it's just one thing among many.
Yeah. You know, on the point you made about, you know, maybe they're kind of, in some sense, happy about this kind of thing in the administration. I mean, I think the verdict on that will be in when we see a little more polling, probably. But I think you're right. I mean, look, Trump deploys these ICE agents to Democratic strongholds, cities and states run by Democrats. It's very clear. It's also very clear that he has signaled to them that he wants very loose rules of engagement. You know, I quoted him to that effect in Non-Zero this week. And, you know, this really worries me that he's going to ratchet things up. And by the way, there was a video I saw today of an ICE agent, since this happened, approaching a car that's following an ICE car and videoing it with a smartphone. And the ICE agent walks up the window and says, it's something like, do you not understand? Did you not get the message a couple of days ago? Clearly referring to this, like a kind of implicit threat that, like, you know, you can get killed if you fuck with us. And then he reaches in and either tries to grab the smartphone or slaps it out of the person's hand or something. And, you know, it's just, you know, we've got his face. We know who he was when I was a boy, you know, I mean, and for that matter, 10 years ago, you would know that he was going to get into trouble. You would know that. Whereas now, you know, he won't. He definitely won't. And probably the same goes for the guy who killed Renee Good, unless you get what I gather is a pretty unlikely eventuality of state authorities, state prosecutors being allowed to prosecute a federal agent, which is not impossible, but hard to arrange. But you know, the federal government will cover it up if there is evidence.
Has his back. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just this slide, man. We are not in a good place. And I really worry about the positive feedback cycle here of, you know, the protesters getting more and more amped up and more numerous, and Trump doing what you might expect. Again, unless the polling clearly shows this is working against him, that the chaos works against him. It's bad.
And he's not Stephen Miller. If the chaos started to work against him, he'd say, "Well, we'll do something different now."
Oh, I think so. If it was clear to him.
So you had mentioned earlier psychology, and it turns out that there's a psychology to this. There's actually a paper written a long time ago, I think in the early 60s, called "They Saw a Game," and it was it was about a game between Dartmouth and Princeton, your town, your people, your university. And apparently it's a very dirty game, and there are a lot of cheating and fouls and so on. And they got students from Dartmouth and Princeton to watch the game, and they found that depending on how you're situated and who you're rooting for, you see it in different ways. You remember in different ways, you interpret in different ways. And so part of me, I end up on Axe looking at the discussion of the video, and there are people saying, well, plainly, this woman was trying to kill him. He was defending her. And I'm like, my first instinct is, you're just lying. But to be more generous, where you come from, this applies to me as well, shapes how you interpret things.
Yeah, no, that's a classic study from like the 50s.
Yeah. 1951, the game happened, I think.
You know, one of John McPhee's roommates was the either quarterback or running back who had his nose broken in that game. Dartmouth was considered notoriously dirty, and they did have a lot more penalties called against them in that game. But you're right, both sides were much more attentive to the penalties committed by the other.
And there's a metaphor for America for right now. We're each very attentive to the penalties committed by the other.
Definitely. Let me say one more thing about this is, you know, first of all, a very frustrating thing for me is that, like, CNN found this video. I don't think many people have seen it necessarily, from a home surveillance camera. So you see when he pulls up 4 minutes before this happens, the agent who killed her pulls up and parks beside her. And you see that. But they don't show us. This is part of an edited video, and they don't show us the rest. I want to watch everything because I still can't figure out what she seems to have been responding to something when she says, "It's fine, dude. You know, I'm not mad at you," but it's nothing he said just then. So I'm thinking, is this his second trip around the car or what?
Yeah.
And I should say, I mean, since I seem to be on her side mainly, I still don't know why she was parked there. Now, I want to emphasize, she was not blocking traffic. It was a two-lane, one-way street, and cars were heading through the one lane with no trouble. And they were also, some of them went on the shoulder behind her, including the cop who pulled up behind her, the ICE agent. That said, I don't understand why she was there. And of course, you know, it was an infraction. You're not supposed to. She was in a lane and it wasn't impeding flow of traffic, but she was in a lane. And if a municipal cop had seen her, he would have given her a citation and told her to move. And I'd like to see that whole video because I'd like to know, like, is there evidence that they had asked her, the guy had asked her to move and she had said no. He had asked her to get out of the car and she had said no. That might help explain why the other ICE agent approached the car in such a threatening manner, which made her freak out and I think try to flee. And that's why she's dead. But there's no excuse for the way that other agent behaved. I mean, that's what should be clear in a rational country is you don't walk up to, you know, if you're a law enforcement agency, you don't say, "Get out of the fucking car and grab for the handle" when when the window is open and you can just, you know, you know, and this guy just showed up. He hadn't had a conversation with him.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've had my dealing. I mean, she's this young white woman. And so this story does not have race in it, you know, thank goodness.
Right.
But I have been, you know, as an older white guy, I've been stopped by cops for various forms of misbehavior. Once as mild as looking at my phone while driving because I had a map phone. Anyway, but it's always, you know, sir, you know, would you mind, you know, how you doing today, sir?
Yeah.
And I'm treated politely. These guys act like fucking stormtroopers. And it's because their mandate is to deal with people who are seen by them as a hateful minority and to expel them from the country. So they behave like stormtroopers, and this is what you get from it.
Yeah, I'm glad that you made that analogy, not me. In my non-zero piece, I took pains to not quite say that. And of course, I'm not quite like that, but that is the direction we're heading in.
They're not literally stormtroopers. I will qualify
but,
that.
But look, there is this much in common, is that, during the 30s, Hitler used the brown shirts to intimidate and brutalize his ideological adversaries. Trump is sending these people into Democratic strongholds and telling them, clearly signaling, if you read the things he said, all rules are off. If you got, get as tough as you want with him. And this sends a signal big time. They are going to stand behind this guy.
Yeah.
And so it's not a totally... Yeah, I mean, so long as you add some nuance to it, I'm afraid it's not a crazy comparison. Well, and I'm glad I was here to add the nuance, Paul.
The guy who starts by comparing Trump to Hitler, he's here for
the
nuance. The
guy who just published a piece called Some Useful Trump-Hitler Comparisons, yes.
Well, again, Trump's funny. Okay, well, that was good.
Go ahead.
Are we moving away from this now?
I think we might, yeah.
I think I'm good. I've been following a little bit about Grok's misbehavior on X, where now there's a thing where Grok will through the magic of AI transform you into what you would look like if you were wearing a bikini or in a suggestive position. And so far, I've just seen this when I'm on X. I've just seen this where attractive women say, hey Grok, put me in a bikini. And so the next thing is them in a bikini. And it's it often is advertisement for OnlyFans or whatever. And that seems a fully consensual. If you want to have a machine turn, put yourself into different clothes, that seems fine. But apparently Grok does not require willing acquiescence to do this. So it is, any woman is now subject to this sort of often public humiliation, and children too, of course. And X is showing a particular disinterest in shutting this down.
Yeah, I guess we can infer that there are some rules, because it is always like put this woman in a bikini or in lingerie or something. By the way, people were doing this with the images of this woman's dead body. Okay, after the shooting, so there were people who said, put her in a bikini or something, and Grok did it.
People are wonderful.
Yeah, aren't they? So there must be some rules, or else people would be saying, hey, Grok, undress her, and that would work. That apparently doesn't work. But Elon Musk, I haven't kept track of this. Has he responded to this at all? It wouldn't be hard to stop Grok from doing this, at least, in response to straightforward requests.
He has made jokes about it, and I think he views this, and maybe it's not unreasonable, as something which is expands the viewer base of X and keeps them happy. So he is not inclined to shut it down. It is what people want.
Yeah. I'm pretty much staying away from Grok. Although I got to say, since I am on Twitter sometimes, there are times when it's easy to make use of it.
When it's not pretending to be Mac Hitler, and not, undressing people against their will, it's actually pretty good AI.
I think it is, certainly on some of the standard, quote, evals, it's done well. That's not the same as being, for example, Claude, or Cloud, as you say, in the Great White North, is just super deft linguistically in a way that doesn't show up on the evals. And it's just an amazing, I'm going through galleys of my book, which I've never done electronically before. This is the first book where I have to deal with Adobe Acrobat rather than just writing the things on the physical paper, before I send it back to my publisher. And I just realized that when I have a question about usage or anything, man, Claude is amazing. I'm sure all the big models would be damn good, but it's very handy. And meanwhile, back in Muskoland, so you saw the tweet. I'll read the tweet. This is another classic Elon Musk, you know, just responds like, yeah. In this case, he responded like with 100 graphic that means 100% agreement. Or didn't respond. He quote tweeted it. I mean, he wants this out there, okay? He didn't just respond to the guy. Sometimes that's what he does, but he's proud of this. So the guy's tweet is, if white men become a minority, we will be slaughtered. Remember, if non-whites openly hate white men while white men hold a collective majority, then they will be 1,000 times more hostile and cruel when they are a majority over whites. White solidarity is the only way to survive. And so that's what Elon said he agrees with 100%. And then as you go down, this is actually a thread that the guy did. And as you go down, they don't get better, believe me. But
yeah.
Do you think Elon, now again, you're not a clinical psychologist, but do you think he's actually mentally ill? I mean, leaving aside, it seems to me you got to almost be crazy to agree with this, to think this guy's just factually right. But that aside, like if you're Elon Musk, doesn't this seem like not the best way to sell Teslas and stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of issues here. First thing, I think a lot of people hold these views who aren't mentally ill. People.
Unless you want to define it that way, but I agree. Yeah,
people kind of racist. You know, it's
But this is kind of beyond that. But anyway,
and also Elon. So this is not disagreeing with you. But Elon Musk, as you know, has a history of at one point his company was going to be evaluated by the SEC or something, and then Musk went on about his drug use, and he has done things which are really irresponsible. But on the other hand, he's the richest man alive. So I think he may view himself as he's doing something right. And maybe the rest of the world might think, kind of like Trump saying, whatever he's doing, it's kind of working for him.
Yeah. But it's the parallels with his father are interesting.
Yeah.
And his grandfather, by the way, I think is, as I recall, was on the race issue. I guess I shouldn't try to recite the details. I'll get something wrong, but trust me, he would have quote tweeted this approvingly too. Anyway, his father, they were from South Africa. I gather his father had some views of this. Oh, but the interesting thing I read some months ago was that when his father was about the age Elon is now, he started going more clearly kind of crazy, not just in these ways, but like weird ideas about various other things that are unrelated ideology. This was the claim. And of course, Elon Musk hates his father, by the way, we should say. His father was also accused of some kind of, I don't know, child sexual abuse or something.
I think this is going to sound like it's only going to get sued if I get this wrong, but didn't he have children with his stepbrother?
I don't know. I don't know. But I know that Musk wants children, stepdaughter. I know that Musk once said something, alluded to some level of evil that he attributed to his father without elaborating. And then I know there were some kinds of allegations about.
Yes, he has. He has had two children with his stepdaughter from his previous marriage. Not Errol Musk, not Elon.
Not Elon.
Although Elon's father issues are themselves very interesting.
Yeah,
he seems to be a devoted and loving father to one of his kids.
Yeah, but one of them apparently got the woke mind virus.
As one does,
it's Elon's offspring.
What do you make of at one point, Gavin Newsom, made or as Trump describes him, new scum, as in his.
Not Trump.
He's a quick guy.
Very creative.
Funny Hitler. But Newsom said at a post on X something like Elon made some sort of remark, you know, sorry, Elon, that your daughter doesn't love you, or something like that. Which was
Wait, who said that?
Gavin Newsom.
That's a little harsh.
Which was extremely nasty, but this is actually Newsom's explicit plan to be as nasty as they are.
Sure.
To be nasty and low. I don't know. I mean, it's not the other way of doing things has worked.
Well, it's like J.D. Vance. Yeah, but I don't think Newsom's goal is to, you know, save the republic. Maybe I'm being too hard, but I think, you know, like J.D. Vance, he would like to get a presidential nomination.
Yep.
And this makes perfect. I mean, this is a big part of the problem is that just generally, leave politicians aside. If you're just an ideologically, you know, inclined influencer on Twitter or something, the way you get stature within your own tribe is to, you know, deeply antagonize the other tribe and often dishonestly represent them.
Yep.
And so on. I mean, this is the situation we're in. So, but I'm glad you have a higher opinion about J.D. Vance and Gavin Newsom than I do. Not that that's a high bar, but
yeah, good. I am. Well,
this is what Canadians are for, Paul, is to say, why don't you give this guy a break?
I got into an argument with somebody where I presented a view of J.D. Vance that was kind of the way we're talking about him now, which is that he's just this chameleon, just shifting. Mm-hmm. To do whatever gains and knows power. Mm-hmm. And the person said to me, why are you so ungenerous? Why don't you assume he's had a genuine change of heart?
Would that be generous, first of all, given the direction in which his heart would have changed?
Well, it's yes. And in a certain way, it's less generous. Like, okay, fine. He now sincerely holds this bunch of shitty views. But it is more generous in saying that he's not sort of a cynical person without a soul. He really now sees the world through MAGA lens.
And yeah.
I bet the truth is, you're the cognitive empathy guy, the truth is a bit of both. And you might say to yourself, I think there's very few people who say, I'm just going to entirely lie about my views to gain favor with this one man. Rather, you start lying, but then your actual views shift in accord with your lie.
Well, that tends to happen. I mean, we all are good at convincing ourselves that whatever we're doing in pursuit of self-interest is morally fine, if not morally motivated. Even
we get high on our own supply.
We get high on our own supply, Paul.
I sent you this. I sent you an email. There's a book I was sent, a blurb. And the very beginning of it, the man, I won't say who he is, because the book's not out yet, but the guy says that he was on his honeymoon and he fell in love again because he brought with him a copy of The Moral Animal. And that introduced him to the joys of evolutionary theory and evolutionary psychology. It totally transformed him.
You know who else read The Moral Animal? By the way,
Al Gore.
Did he? No, I don't think so. He didn't read my book on evolutionary psychology, but Larry Ellison, apparently. I mean, I heard this decades ago via Arianna Huffington. There's a whole, you know, because there are, in particular, high status males who take the message of evolutionary psychology. It's a little, I mean, I don't want to overdo the Hitler comparisons, but it's a version of the naturalistic fallacy in some of its incarnations, which is that, oh, so it's good for us to, you know, philander maximally and cheat on our wives and so on. I don't know if Larry Ellison's ever cheated on his wife, but there is that kind of appeal to evolutionary psychology to some people. So what else, and how long have we been doing this?
Is we have overtime now? We are like 50 minutes in.
Oh, it's time.
Last time we gave away overtime, but not this time.
No. I forced us to spend too much time in Minneapolis. I'm sorry. I know.
No, it's affecting.
It's important and it's not inspiring. Without further ado, we're going to overtime. You can have access to that by being a paid subscriber to either the Small Potatoes newsletter. Make sure you get the right one. Or the Non-Zero newsletter.
There's only one.
So do that. And anything else we want to say? Well, let's talk about what we might talk about in overtime.
Sleep problems.
Sleep problems. Your AI piece in Small Potatoes.
I have an AI piece in Small Potatoes, and I also have a piece called Why Are Professors So Conservative?
Oh, I thought that was the... I mean, that's the AI piece I was thinking about, because...
Anyway.
That's about how
professors reject innovation. Resist. And the Chronicle of Higher Education is going to reprint it.
Is it?
Is it? Yes.
Well, aren't we special? That is special. Chronicle is highly regarded, right?
I had this in my second Substack. The Chronicle has picked up. The other one was, Why Are So Few Professors Troublemakers? So I'm having a whole professor
thing. I think you've got the formula down for Chronicle pickup there.
Yeah. My third one is, Why Are Professors So Hot? I'm writing this up right now. So
you name names?
Yeah. Okay. Name names. I show pictures.
Uh-huh. And did Grok play a role here?
Main one is of me. Just kinda,
Well, look, who knows? He might look good in a bathing suit. Who knows?
Who knows? So we could talk about that. We could talk about sleep. There's some notable deaths you want to talk about?
Well, let's see. Who did die? Bob Weir died of the Grateful Dead. I didn't have that much to say about him.
No, me neither.
But wait, somebody else died.
Who was the Chariots of the Gods guy.
Oh, I know nothing about him, but that book. Yeah. Eric von, whatever it is, Heinegan or something. What is it?
You have problems with foreign names, I guess. This is Eric von Duncan. I may not be pronouncing his name right.
That's exactly the way I pronounced it, I think.
And you do well.
So, yeah, AI in higher education, sleep issues. I should write this down so we don't disappoint. These two obituaries, and seems like there was something else, but who knows? But thanks everybody who's followed us this far, and hope you'll follow us into overtime.